Turing's Legacy, New Jersey, 1947. What Turing was hunting for, which might have saved his life, was right under his nose all the time. He'd even received a hint in 1948, even before he moved up to Manchester. A friend from Bletchley days, Jack Good, had written him, "Have you heard of the transistor? It is a small crystal alleged to perform nearly all the functions of a vacuum tube. It might easily be the biggest thing since the war. Is England going to get a look in?" But then, there was only silence. Something had happened in America to slow down the new device's development, and the reason goes to the heart of how it worked. When Turing was a student, most electricity specialists felt that all the substances in the world were divided into two quite different types. There were substances such as steel or copper that could transmit an electric current, and there were substances such as glass or wood that could never conduct a current. The first group were called conductors, and the second were insulators. They had as much in common as aardvarks and coal mines. The two categories just did not overlap. That simple distinction seemed to explain the age-old question of why you can see through glass, but not through steel. The inside of a steel wall looks a bit like a huge, abandoned Egyptian temple, full of neatly aligned pillars of iron and carbon atoms. Seen in close-up, however, those atoms aren't smooth or neat. Many have lost their outermost electrons entirely, and, as we saw in the first radar chapter, those electrons float aimlessly inside the steel. When light flies in, it steadily gets used up as it shoves those electrons so that they start moving with greater energy. This means that as a light wave goes deeper into the steel, there's less of it that hasn't been diverted, soaked up by those lurking free electrons. It's as if a wave of explorers entered the abandoned temple and, one by one, were dragged behind the pillars. Pretty soon, there aren't many explorers left. Light waves reflected from you can go in one side, but won't make it out the other. Inside a wall of glass, by contrast, the atoms are better behaved. Their outermost electrons are much more tightly bound to their atoms and have no interest in waylaying explorers. A light wave that enters their domain will soar in and out unscathed, emerging as bright as ever. Light waves reflected from you will travel all the way through. You can be seen by someone standing on the other side. That difference is why metals conduct electricity and glass doesn't. Indeed, it is why electric wires often sit on glass insulators. If there are only these two possibilities, that some materials can always conduct electric current and others can never do that, then Turing's legacy would consist only of a few interesting papers and some huge, constantly overheating rooms filled with plugs and vacuum tubes in complex arrangements. The computers we take for granted today wouldn't exist. But metal and glass aren't the only substances that exist. Our universe has something else, and this gives rise to a third possibility. When Turing went on his long runs, he often passed along hilly country paths or even raced directly on the sandy beaches with which Britain, being an island, is so well endowed. Those sands and hills are composed in large part of the element silicon, as indeed is much of the surface of our planet. Mount Everest is largely made of silicon. Radio technicians had been irritated by silicon for a long time. It didn't fit into the two accepted categories like everything else. It wasn't a metal that always conducted electricity, nor was it like glass or diamond, which don't conduct electricity. It was different, confusing. Much of the time, if a fragment of silicon was in a circuit, it would seem to act like an ordinary run-of-the-mill insulator. That was fine. If you let a wire into silicon, then any current traveling through the wire would skid to a halt when it reached that barrier. What bothered radio technicians was that silicon didn't always act like this. Sometimes a chunk of silicon that you thought would be an insulator would somehow undergo what seemed to be an unseen twisting and stretching inside, and then it would no longer be a good, dependable, happy-to-stay-at-home insulator. Instead, it would now act like a conductor, carrying floods of electrons along. It was neither one nor the other. It was a semiconductor.